that the magnetic fields from the return current and the forward current from the semiconductor, those magnetic fields, I say they're adding. Otherwise, you wouldn't get that beautiful broadband, nearly perfect impedance masks when I go from coax to twin lead by using that procedure. You see what I'm saying on this one, John? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Absolutely, Dick. The strange thing is, I find it difficult concept when we're dealing with the coaxial magnetic field and we start to separate it, it becomes individual on each conductor, not coaxial. Now they're going to be side by side. I find that a difficult concept to find out how that works out.
Okay, when I was talking about the twin lead before, and the right-hand twin lead has got current flowing away from me, and I wrap my hand around it, and my fingers wrap around that wire, my thumb points in the direction of the current, my fingers wrap around the wire, and my fingers are aimed upward in the vicinity between the two wires. And my friend's hand on the left-hand wire with his thumb aimed toward me, and his fingers are wrapped around correctly, again, his fingers are aimed upward. So in the center area between the two twin leads, the currents from each wire add. Outside of the two wires of the twin lead, the currents are, let me think, are they also, they're also adding on the outside. So, therefore, the fact that I'm using the, I could use the right-hand wire all by itself, and I could have a steady-state current flowing into it, and I could analyze the magnetic field that flows. I could use the left-hand wire with the current always flowing toward me, steady-state current all by itself, and I could analyze the magnetic field that flows around it. Now, by superposition at that Z-axis on the cable, I can put those two together, and I don't think I'm creating a conflict. The magnetic field around each wire in cross-section is nearly a perfect circle. From one point of view, the right-hand wire has clockwise magnetic field lines. The left-hand wire, from the same point of view, has counterclockwise lines. And both inside the twin lead, between the two, and outside, everything seems to be copacetic, I think. Is there a problem there, John? Over to you, John, K2RIW.
Okay, so we follow this made twin lead out of coax to the point where it now starts to join back into coax. We still have the left-hand side, which is the braid, with the counterclockwise direction, and we still maintain the clockwise direction on the center lead. So that means it's going to stay the same as the braid envelops the center conductor going down to whatever fitting you have. Is that the idea?
Now, I'm beginning to see what you're saying. If I use that picture I've got for twin lead, and if I assume the magnetic field on that left-hand wire, which I'm about to slowly make it into a outer shield, if that magnetic field kept doing the same thing, I run into a conflict. I'm now beginning to think that because the magnetic field created from the return current on the inside surface of the outer braid, because that's in the opposite direction, I'm going to think one of two things is happening. Because we're inside of the conductor instead of outside, by some magic I haven't figured out yet, the magnetic field is of the opposite sense. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is because the total area of the inside surface of the outer conductor is so many times larger than the outer area of the center conductor that because the amps per centimeter, the current density on this outer conductor is so much lower that the magnetic field is so much lower. So either one of two things is happening. Either because the current density is so low as that outer conductor gets very large, either the current density in amps per centimeter of circumference is so low that the magnetic field due to the outer conductor goes to zero, so to speak, and only the center conductor is making the magnetic field. I could make an argument that way, or I could make an argument that whatever magnetic field the outer conductor is making on the inner surface, that because we're inside of that surface and not outside of it, somehow another reversal is happening so that the magnetic field's there. So either the magnetic field is not being canceled by the outer conductor because it's so small, or by some magic it adds in sense because we're inside of it instead of outside.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I haven't figured out which one it is, but it's got to be one of those two is what I think, John. How about you, John?
WA2VDH with a comment.
Recognized. Well, Dick, also, I relate that sort of exactly what you're saying to, maybe I'm wrong, if you had a very large bar magnet, north-south, of course, and you had a very tiny one north-south, and you brought the two norths together, they would stick together because one is going to overpower the other one. Pick up the other station, and then I have a question for you.
WA2VDH, go ahead. TQRW, my name is Dick.
Okay, fine business, Dick. Yeah, this is WA2VDH. Name is John. I think your second comment was right. The idea that if you take a closed loop, that H.DL stuff, around the conductors, it gives you the net amount of current flowing through the conductors. So if you were to take a loop that encircled, say, only the inner conductor of the coaxial cable and did a closed loop around that, that would give you the net current, would be proportional to the net current on the center conductor. But as soon as you cross the outer conductor braid and take a loop around that, the H.DL would give you a net of zero because you'd have the center conductor current going one way and the braid current going the other way. Go ahead, Dick.
I like that, John, but we've got a problem. I've got current flowing in the center conductor. I drew a loop around it in order to sense the magnetic field due to the current flowing in the center conductor. And by Faraday's law, I figure up, I induce a certain amount of current in that loop or a certain amount of voltage across the gap in the loop. And so current flowing in the center conductor and the magnetic field it creates, your loop analysis works very nicely. I've got the exact same amount of return current flowing in the outer conductor. How does my loop of analysis in the dielectric area work when the current is conducting on a circumferential surface, the outer conductor, which is outside of my loop of analysis? Does that my loop of analysis only measures what current, what magnetic field and variation of that magnetic field is happening inside the loop? If by some magic I could make current only flow in the outer shield, and I've got my loop of analysis somewhere in the dielectric area of the coax cable, will that loop of analysis see anything? Over to you, John. This is John number 2, WA2VDH. Go ahead, John number 2.
Yeah, it's only going to be the amount of current enclosed in that loop. So so long as you are only enclosing the inner conductor, you get no net contribution from the outer conductor braid. As soon as you make that closed and circular loop large enough that it now encompasses the braid, now it takes into effect the braid. In other words, the braid current is not causing any contribution inside of inside that region between the center conductor and the braid. Go ahead.
Okay. Can we then conclude that the current that flows on the inner surface of the outer conductor, that return current makes no magnetic field? If I took my loop of analysis and I expanded more and more in diameter so it's just barely inside of the outer conductor and current is flowing in that outer conductor inner surface, does my loop see anything? And maybe the answer is no. So maybe I could simplistically say that the outer conductor's current does not generate a magnetic field. Mr. VDH, K2RIW?
It generates a magnetic field. It's just that as soon as you cross it, as soon as your loop that you're doing your integration around, actually, as soon as you cross the inner surface of the outer conductor,
then it cancels what the center conductor is generating. So now once you're outside of that inner surface of the outer conductor, your net field is zero. And if you look at what happens with the two parallel lines, the twin lead, when you go to the extreme right or the extreme left, you see cancellation of the two fields between the two parallel conductors. You do get a peak, which is why I guess you don't want to ever tack down a twin lead by putting anything in between the two leads. But once you get away from the twin lead, there's no particular problem. It's, as you have said in the past, it's well shielded. Go ahead.
Yeah. Once your loop of analysis on a coax cable becomes larger in diameter and crosses the outer conductor, I can see how everything goes to zero. I can also see that because I'm outside of a thoroughly shielded structure, the coax cable in the ideal world is a thoroughly shielded structure, my loop of analysis on the outside of it has nothing to analyze. But John and I, John number one and I, still have a problem, and that is I can see how my loop of analysis around the center conductor senses the current flowing in the magnetic, the current flowing in the center conductor and the magnetic field that it's creating. If by some magic I could stop the return current from flowing in the outer conductor, would my loop of analysis around the center conductor sense any difference? VDH, K2RIW?
Well, if you were to stop the current in the outer conductor, then essentially you just have a single conductor circuit. I mean, how is that current returning to the generator if it's not coming back on the outer conductor? Go ahead.
Oh, I've got an answer for that one, John. Are you familiar with G-line, GABU line? That's the kind of transmission line where you have a single wire and a layer of dielectric material above that wire. You've got this launching structure on one end that looks like a great big funnel with a wire going down the center of the funnel, and you have a single, similar receiving structure. So I can launch, by way of a G-line, a GABU line, I can launch a beautiful TEM wave on a single wire with a dielectric coating above that wire. So I could, in theory, use my coaxial cable like a shielded G-line. Over to you, VDH, K2RIW.
Yeah, but aren't we talking about a TEM structure that'll propagate down to DC? I mean, a G-line doesn't operate TEM. And I think, don't the field lines essentially terminate on the line itself, like displace the half wave? I mean, what we're looking at is, I think for the coaxial line, is the TEM propagating mode that works down to DC, essentially. Go ahead.
I've seen G-line called TEM. I think a G-line is a TEM line, John. Go ahead.
It'll work to DC. Go ahead.
A negative. There has to be a certain number of wavelengths of thickness of the dielectric material in the cable. But as long as you obey that law, it is a TEM structure. Go ahead.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. Okay. But I mean, in the coaxial structure that we're talking about here, and in the twin lead structure, this will propagate down to DC, and it is TEM. Go ahead, Dick.
There are lots of TEM structures that might not go down to DC. I can't go down to DC with a free space TEM wave. Over to you, John.
Okay, but we are talking about a condition here that is essentially a TEM, and in this case, the outgoing current and the return current have to be balanced if we're going if the structure is going to be shielded. I mean, if the current is returning on this line, And it is operating in, not as a Gabreau line, but it should be balanced and it should be shielded. At least that's the way I see it. Go ahead, Dick.
I 100% agree with you that well-used, well-designed coaxial cable is 100% shielded structure, 99.999. And so with your current loop of analysis that's on the outside of the center conductor, at some reasonable radius toward the outer conductor, and it's sensing that current, I can see that. Tell me what effect your sensing current has. I'm not changing the dimensions of your sensing circle of wire. I'm not changing its dimensions, but I now want to include the magnetic effects due to the current that's flowing on the inner surface of the outer conductor. That current that flows on the inner surface of the outer conductor, does it add, subtract, or do nothing to what I sense with my circle of analysis around the center conductor? Over to you, John.
As soon as I see it, the way I see it, Dick, as soon as that loop of analysis crosses the inner surface of the outer conductor of the coax line, it then includes the field of that returning current, which cancels the field of the center conductor current, and from then on, as you make that loop of analysis larger and larger and larger, your net is going to be zero. Your net is going to be zero because you're now outside of the that inner surface of the outer conductor, and therefore we have shielding. That's where I see it. Go ahead.
I agree with what you're saying, John, but you're changing the experiment. You said, as I increase the loop of analysis beyond the inner surface of the outer conductor, what happens if I don't increase the loop of analysis? I've just got some intermediate radius of that loop of analysis, midway, let's say, between the center conductor diameter and the outer conductor diameter, midway between the two. I'm not changing it. When current is flowing through that outer conductor, inner surface, what effect does it have on the area inside of my loop? That's what I'm asking. Over to you, John.
If your loop of analysis doesn't include the inner surface of the outer conductor, then I would say it has no effect. In other words, that current is entirely outside of your loop of analysis, so you don't see any effect at all when you're between when you're in the dielectric region outside of the inner conductor and within the outer conductor, within the space inside the outer conductor. Go ahead.
Okay. If it has no effect on my loop of analysis, that's at the intermediate radius, can I then make the leap of faith that the current flowing in the outer conductor is not affecting the magnetic field created by the inner conductor? Over to you, John.
In the coaxial structure, I would say no, it is not affecting it so long as your analysis doesn't penetrate that inner surface. Now, as what you were saying before, as you are to gradually, say, morph this into over a distance of a couple of wavelengths into a twin lead, you can see how that would work again, because now the two currents are equal in opposite direction, and when you're outside the region of the two twin leads, again, you get cancellation. But in between the two leads, the two twin leads, you get an addition. Now, but I guess that would occur over the region where you're morphing from coax into twin lead. Go ahead.
The way you worded that, you made it sound like as I morph from coax to twin lead, that for the first time the currents become equal in the two wires. Let's backtrack. I say the currents are equal in the two conductors even before I did the morph. The amount of current flowing in the center conductor in amperes the amount of current flowing, the return current magnitude in amperes flowing in the outer conductor, I think in the coax cable, are equal. So by a three-step process, you seem to be telling me that the current flowing, the return current flowing in the outer conductor inside of my loop of radius, which is at an intermediate radius, that the current flowing in the outer conductor is not creating a magnetic field. By a three-step process, you seem to be saying that, John. Over to you, K2RIW.
Yeah, I would say that it can't create a magnetic field within the region in which it's flowing because of the fact that H.dl has got to be equal to Ni. It's got to equal to the amount of current enclosed around that loop of analysis. So if you're inside of a current-carrying conductor where the current-carrying conductor is like a tube as the braid, the outer conductor of the coax line is, and you do that analysis, you're not going to get any contribution from the outer conductor because that loop of analysis doesn't include the outer conductor. As soon as you include it, then you have its effect. But inside of it, you're not going to measure any effect from it. Go ahead.
Okay, now let me put it all together. I've got ordinary, old-fashioned RG8 coax cable where the polyethylene is the dielectric. And I can say that every Z-axis along the cable, the current flowing in the center conductor and the total current flowing in the outer conductor, inner surface, are equal to each other and opposite in direction. Can I then say that all of the magnetic field that's inside of the polyethylene is only due to the current in the center conductor? And although the current flowing into the outer conductor, inner surface, is equal to it, that is not creating any magnetic field in the polyethylene. You seem to be, by a three-step process, saying that. Is the polyethylene seeing any magnetic field from the current that flows in the outer conductor? Over to you, John, K2RIW.
Yes, I would agree with that, Dick. I would say that in the polyethylene, in that region between the two conductors, that the outer conductor is not causing any contribution. And if we didn't have that outer conductor and you were only running current down that center line and the current was returning someplace else, I'm not talking about the G line now, but the current was returning some other path, then that magnetic field would extend outward and outward. The reason that the field vanishes outside of the coax line is the fact that now when you take a loop outside of the line, you see the two equal currents going one way and the other way, which cause the field to completely cancel outside of the coax line, which is why it's so well shielded. Go ahead.
Okay, now I'm going to go to the next guess. I know for a fact that I can, at certain frequencies, make a well-shielded coax cable where the outer conductor is not a tube. It's a whole bunch of closely spaced parallel wires. As long as the spacing between those wires is very small compared to a wavelength, I can make coax cable where the outer conductor is not a braid. It's a whole bunch of closely spaced, insulated from each other, if I like, parallel wires. I know the current that's flowing in those wires. If there's 40 wires, then there's 1/40th of the current flowing in each one of them compared to the center conductor. I can analyze the current flowing into each individual wire with my right-hand rule. And if I add all of those inner currents, all of those finger-curled magnetic fields inside of the outer conductor, the composite outer conductor, if I add them all together, I believe they cancel. I'm beginning to slowly believe that my phony piece of, my crazy piece of coax cable out of 40 parallel wires for the outer conductor, and I use right-hand rule on every one of those wires, I see a mechanism by which all of those currents added together add to zero. So I'm beginning to think the outer conductor, although it's got current, it doesn't make a magnetic field. Does that seem to make some sense to you, John? KQRIW.
Yeah, I would say yes, as long as it's much less than a wavelength, which I think you said already, in the same way just as the twin lead, so long as the spacing is much less than a wavelength when you're far away from it, as you've mentioned in the past, is well shielded. Is well shielded so long as the spacing is much less than a wavelength. Go ahead.
What's going to happen when you have a standing wave ratio VSWR, then you put your hand into the coaxial cable and then you feel the hot spot? Do you or don't you have the external magnetic field in this spot?
I say no. As long as I've got a well shielded coax cable, so then when I put one signal down the cable, all of the signal is contained on the inside and none of it's on the outside, because I've obeyed all the rules for proper shielding. I've got a good solid braid, tight braid on the outside, well-installed conductors. I can make a signal flow from east to west, and it's thoroughly shielded. I can make a signal flow from west to east, and it's thoroughly shielded. If I add the two together, you and I call it standing wave ratio. It must obey superposition. The way it behaved with signal A, the way it behaved in signal B, when I do A plus B together, the response has to be the same. A was shielded, B was shielded, A plus B has to be shielded. Lots and lots of people think that simply because I've created standing wave ratio on coaxial cable, that I'm creating external magnetic field, external unshielded signals. Lots of people believe that. Yes, it is true, if I don't use the proper balancing device, there's all kinds of mechanisms by which my unbalanced cable feeding a balanced antenna like a dipole without a proper balancing device, I've got all kinds of signals on just one signal going up the cable. I've got signal flowing on the outside of the cable. And now in that circumstance where I've already got leakage and now I create higher standing wave ratio, yes, I'm going to have more leakage. But that's just a worsening of a condition that was already there, leakage because of an improper balance. VSWR itself does not create radiation on twin lead or coax. Anybody disagree with that? K2RIW.
I got a question on a previous issue.
Go ahead, John, number one.
Okay, Dick, I seem to have a problem with what you were describing. If you were to make a piece of shield out of individual wires, insulated, and you had current traveling down them, and that they're linear and displaced circumferentially around the center conductor. Now, you said current traveling down there would create the right-hand rule and cancel out. But if we pass the DC current down there and we put an amp probe across that, you would read current in that in those groups of wires.
And not if I was really using it as a coax cable. If the amount of current on the center conductor was 1 ampere flowing east to west, and the amount of current on the outer conductor was 1 ampere flowing west to east, the opposite direction, my current probe outside of that coax cable would see nothing. What you're saying is correct. If I applied current only to the outer shield, DC current, now I would have magnetic field picked up by my... You say current probe. Got to be careful now.
A clamp-on.
Yeah, but there's a kind of clamp-on that can see DC, and the majority of them can only see AC current. I own a clamp-on meter that can see steady-state magnetic field. And so if I put current only during... DC current on the outer conductor only, my clamp-on's going to see that. So you're saying that that's not creating cancellation, and I agree with you. But I'm not using it in a balanced manner. The current on the center conductor and the current on the outer conductor are not equal to each other. And even in a solid sheath outer conductor coax cable, if I put steady DC current on that outer conductor, my clamp-on is going to see current there also. Back to you, John, number one.
Other questions?
WGB first. Go ahead, John.
Okay, Dick. Well, now the thing is, the center conductor carrying the same current, much smaller, and displaced quite a distance away, having a much smaller magnetic field, how does it cancel?
If I'm using the coax cable in a balanced manner, and I put 1 ampere on the center conductor flowing outward, and 1 ampere on the outer conductor flowing inward, I think your clamp-on DC sensing ammeter will see zero current. Over to you, John.
Okay, I'm going to have to try that experiment. You might be right. It was just the concept is a little difficult to understand because for it to cancel, the magnetic fields would have to be equal. And I don't think they would be. So that I'm going to have to check, but good idea.
I've got a way you can check it in mentally even before you go there. Let me drop.
Good, go ahead.
Let's assume that your outer conductor is an inch diameter and your center conductor is a third of an inch diameter. I take a third of an inch diameter wire all by itself and I put 1 ampere through it. Your clamp-on ammeter is going to measure 1 ampere. I then take that away. I put your 1 inch diameter wire inside your clamp ammeter, and I put 1 ampere through it, you're going to measure 1 ampere. Your clamp-on ammeter doesn't care what diameter is the current carrying wire. As long as that wire is inside of the loop of the clamp-on, it's going to measure the real current. At first, intuitively, you'd say, hey, the magnetic field is distributed very differently on the small diameter wire versus the large diameter wire. The clamp-on ammeter doesn't care. Over to you, John, number one, K2RIW.
Okay, I just thought that the inner conductor would generate a much reduced amplitude of a magnetic field because of its physical structure compared to the outer conductor, and that's where I was going with that. But interesting thought. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, we have another slight problem here. That is when I'm sending DC voltage down a wire, DC current, you could say the wavelength is infinity. When the wavelength is infinity and the rate of change of current is so small, it no longer creates any eddy currents in nearby conductors. There is zero magnetic shield in that case. If I ran a transformer at 60 hertz and it's got a strong magnetic field because I got a really lousy set of EI laminations and I'm coming into partial saturation and whatever, and I tried to shield that with, let me pick a number, 16th of an inch thick copper, six-sided box. As far as that very low frequency, 60 hertz is concerned, the depth of penetration, skin depth of that copper at 60 hertz is so big that a hell of a lot of that magnetic field is going to come out of that box. And if I go down to 10 hertz, it gets worse. I go down to 1 hertz, and my beautiful six-sided copper box doesn't even give me 1% shielding, if you know what I mean. You go down to a low enough frequency, everything that you think is a magnetic field, a shield, as a pure conductor, ain't a magnetic shield anymore. By way of very stoochy, new metal, high mu magnetic materials, yes, I can do some magnetic shunting. But pure conductor will not shield at DC. So when you've got a piece of coax cable with inner and outer conductor running at DC, there's no shielding there. That clamp-on ammeter is going to see exactly what current flows in each one of those conductors. WGB, K2RIW.
Well, Dick, I know with the twin lead, if you separate it, you can read the individual components of the current. But if you clamp it around both of them, of course you don't. Exactly canceling out. So I just didn't think it would be that way with different diameters and space so far apart. I thought there would be a difference. I know there would be a reduction, there would be some canceling, but I didn't think it would be zero.
Okay. If I'm using conductive materials like copper, and if my frequency is zero hertz, I'm putting DC current down a wire, and I put another shielded copper wire around it, what do you believe is the skin depth of penetration? in skin depth is a function of 1 over square root of frequency, and frequency is 0, and I divide by 0. My skin depth is a very big number, John. Go ahead.
Oh, no, absolutely. I agree with you. As the frequency goes down, we get more and more better use out of the copper, without a doubt. But I just thought that was an interesting point. And if you have time, I have another question on the dual generators and the slotted line, if we have time.
Yeah, let me back up on what you just said. If I go down to lower and lower frequencies, you're saying we use more and more of the copper. I accept that. You use the whole cross-section of the copper. But any copper you put on the outside of it, like the outer conductor of coax cable, no longer has any shielding effect when you go down to DC. Yes, all the magnetic field goes through the, all the signal goes through the copper. There is no skin depth, per se. The skin depth is infinity. Therefore, the outer conductor, which to your and my eye optically looks like a shield, at DC, there is absolutely 0.0 shielding effect of that outer conductor. If I put 1 ampere down a piece of wire that's a center conductor all by itself, and I put my clamp on ammeter on there, I measure the 1 ampere. I take a piece of hardline coaxial cable, and I put 1 ampere down only the center conductor, and I put my clamp on ammeter on there, I say I will measure 1.000 ampere on that clamp-on ammeter. That outer shield of conducting copper material gave you absolutely zero shielding of the magnetic field created by the DC current flowing through the center conductor. Does that seem to make some sense, John? Go ahead.
Oh, Dick, I absolutely agree with that. No, there's no question about that. That's a given.
A possible experiment to demonstrate this?
So the word shielding is a very relative thing. Go ahead, John, number 2.
I was just thinking of an experiment that might address this. If we took a length of coaxial cable, let's say 10-foot length, stripped both ends of it, and tied the center and outer conductor together at one end, and then have the other end of it, and use this cable to wind an electromagnet, wind it up around a nail, and now run current into the other end and out of that same end. If it's thoroughly shielded, then we shouldn't get an electromagnet, but if it's not shielded, then we should get the magnet should become the nail should become a magnet. Go ahead.
I have a comment.
Yeah, it wasn't clear. I'm starting with high-quality braided coaxial cable. I wind the solenoid coil, and I put a nail down the center. And I'm about to apply current from center conductor on the left-hand end to center conductor on the right-hand end. And whether or not I connect the shields back together, I don't think it matters, but I can connect the shields. So in that case, I've made a solenoid coil with DC current flowing through it out of coaxial cable. I think whether I could do one experiment with the shield there and build a second one identical with no shield, and I say there'll be no difference in the magnetization of the nail. John, number 2, you agree with that?
Well, if the same current is returning on the other line, in other words, that's why I'd say the far end of the cable short the center and outer conductor together, or put a 50-ohm resistor, or put any resistor there, and then at the other end of it, after you've wound it up, at the other end, put your voltage source there so that current goes down the center conductor and comes back on the outer conductor. As the cable is wound around the nail, so if it is shielded, then the nail shouldn't become a magnet. But if it's not shielded, then the nail should become a magnet. Go ahead.
Okay. If I take twin lead and wind it around a solenoid structure, and the far end of the twin lead is shorted, and the near end of the two wires, I put current down them. So now I've got current flowing clockwise, and current flowing counterclockwise on the solenoid. I get essentially no magnetic field. and whether I do it with twin lead or coax cable, current flowing down center conductor, current coming back over the shield, I say I'm going to get zero magnetic field. Do you disagree with that, Sean number two? Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that, and doesn't that mean now that the coaxial cable is shielding its magnetic field? In other words, the fact that you can't make the nail become a magnet due to those balanced currents going there, that the coaxial cable is shielded. Go ahead.
Magnetic cancellation, isn't it, Dick?
Yeah, that's not shielding, that's cancellation. Was there shielding going on when I did it with twin lead, John number two? Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I might be confusing the term shielding and cancellation. I was interpreting the two as being the same. The fact that we're getting cancellation means that none of the field is outside of it, and therefore we're not getting any contribution in the nail. There's no net magnetic field that's causing the nail to become magnetic. Go ahead.
When the DC current is zero in frequency, hertz, really DC current, no change in the current, and if I'm only using conductive materials like copper and silver and gold, I say nothing on this planet is a magnetic shield. Do you agree with that, John number two?
Yes, I agree with that. I think I may be confusing shielding with cancellation, as John just said before. Go ahead.
I have a comment.
Go ahead, Wes.
I have a problem with the statement of John number two. And I do have a problem with the statement of John number one. If we have a twin wire or the coaxial cable and we have a short, then at the end of it, and then we wind around the nail, there are certain principles ruling the magnetic amplifiers. The point is that if you have a twin lead and then you separate the distance between these two leads till the magnetic flux around would be in loose correlation one to each other, then by moving a piece of metal in between them, you get the magnetization. So for the same token, by placing that wire with the proper spacing smaller than the magnetic flux on it, you will have an effect of magnetization on the nail. Now, my question would be if you have a alternating current going through that wire that is short at the end, and then you have the steady DC current going at the same time, let me jump, then you would create sort of the magnetic amplifier. Because for DC, the wire has its own resistance, so it would not be shorted. For the AC, it might be the same when we take into consideration that the frequency of that AC may create an impedance in which that the wire would not seem to be short. Now, by maneuvering with the DC on that structure, you actually regulating the magnetic flux in within that coil and to XGN.
Yeah, I'm going to go one step beyond what I think Wesley just said. I'm going to wind my solenoid out of twin lead, and the way you bend twin lead, there's an easy bend and a hard bend. The easy bend is where I bend it. I think you can picture ordinary twin lead with plastic webbing in between. You can easily picture if it's flat against the table and I take the end of it and I bend it up, that's the easy bend. If I take the end of it when it's flat against the table and I bend it to the right or the left, that's the hard bend. But now if I take twin lead and I wrap it around a magnetic structure like a nail. Let's make it a fat nail, very fat nail. And I wind it so the right-hand side of the twin lead is always closest to the center. I'm doing the hard bend in the way I wrap the solenoid coil. So I've got twin lead used, wrapped around a in a solenoid coil, but it's everywhere bent with the hard bend. Therefore, the right-hand wire is always close to the nail. The left-hand wire is always far from the nail. If I'm pouring DC current down the twin lead with a short at the far end, I know I'm going to get the exact same magnetic field. If I pass AC down it, now all hell breaks loose. The right-hand wire is everywhere close to the nail and experiences a very different amount of inductance compared to the left-hand wire, which is a larger diameter and further from the nail. Because the right-hand wire has one inductance, and I'm not sure now if it's higher or lower, and the left-hand wire has a different inductance. Now when I pass an AC current down that twin lead with a short circuit at the far end, each of the wires are not identical in their voltage drop because they have a different amount of inductance. Now I might not get complete cancellation. What's your guess on that one, John number two first? John number two, K2LIW.
Okay, Dick, I see what you're saying because you're bending the wire in a way that one has a larger radius than the other. Let me present it this way. A transformer with a center tap, and I have done this, I've taken the transformer and measured from center tap to either side and gotten slightly different resistances. Why? Because the winding had to go around, as the coil secondary got bigger, had to go around a larger radius. Yet the voltage induced in each half of the center tap was the same. Why? Because it enclosed the same amount of magnetic field. So I think this is sort of a dual of that same argument. Go ahead.
I'm going to agree with what you said, John, but it's a different structure. In the case of the EI laminations of a transformer, you've got a very clearly defined closed magnetic field around that coil of wire. In the case of this nail that we described, a great big chunk of the magnetic reluctance is through air. So you've got a nice magnetic structure through the nail, but from the end of the nail, those magnetic lines have to go out through the air and come back in at the other end of the nail. And so those eddy currents, so to speak, the inner winding of the twin lead and the outer winding of the twin lead are going to see different amounts of that. Therefore, they've got very different inductances, and at AC fields, they're going to have a different number of Henrys, and therefore with AC current flowing through that shorted twin lead, the current through one wire and the current, the voltage drop through one wire and the voltage drop through the other wire might not be equal. And by the way, in the case of your transformer, you've got equal voltages on each half, even though the resistance was slightly different. If I put identical loads on each half, I'd measure slightly different voltages because the different resistance would give me a different resistive voltage drop. John number two, K2LIW.
Yeah, but in terms of the induced voltage, I agree with you. Under load, you would get different voltage drops, but I'm saying the induced voltage that has nothing to do with IR drop in the winding, that induced voltage, that's going to follow strictly the ampere circuital law about the H.DL equal NI around the closed loop. I think it's going to boil down to only being proportional to the amount enclosed in that loop. And I think that's the deciding factor. Go ahead, Dick.
If I'm wrapping a solenoid coil around a nail where a lot of the path is through air, and if I widen two solenoid coils, one that's exactly the right diameter so it's snug against the nail, and the second coil of the exact same number of turns, but a much larger diameter, so now there's a great big air gap between the nail and the solenoid coil. I say that those two coils are going to have a different inductance. What do you think, John?
That for me, Dick?
That's John number two right now. John number two?
Okay, I can see where, the fact that a lot of the field is included in air, that might have, that could affect it. The fact that it's not snug against it, but in terms of the, okay, yeah, I guess then it would have to be the reciprocal. I have to think about that one. I got to think about it for a little while. I'll turn it back to you, Dick.
I disagree, Dick.
Well, here's my way of looking at it. Assume by some magic I created some magnetic field in the nail. And in the case of the very tightly wound coil, all of the magnetic field that leaves the left-hand end of the nail and curves through air is going to come back to the right-hand end of the nail, and 99% of that magnetic field will be on the outside of my tightly wound solenoid. My second solenoid is a very large diameter, but the same number of turns. And now if by some magic I induce the exact same amount of magnetic field in the nail, and the magnetic field has to curve back, a large percentage of those in-air magnetic field lines curve back to the nail and follow a path inside of that outer solenoid. So because the magnetic path, the amount of it that's inside the solenoid and outside of the solenoid, is so different with the small solenoid diameter and the large solenoid diameter, I say you're going to get very different magnetic characteristics, very different inductance. In the case of a very large diameter coil, solenoid, I think the nail is going to give you very little change as you insert the nail or retract the nail, because almost all of the magnetic field in the nail doesn't care about the solenoid at all. It curves back around itself. Most of those lines stay inside the outer solenoid coil. It's very large. You see where I'm going on that one, John, number two, K2RIW?
Well, I do think, though, that the nail will affect the inductance. If you remove the nail from there, you would get a vast difference in inductance with or without the nail, guys.
I agree. But in the case of the tight coil, I remove the nail and I get a big percentage of change of inductance. But the very, very large coil, where it's mostly air and a little bit of nail, I say I get a very small percentage of change of inductance when I remove the nail. John number two, K2RIW?
I'm not sure. I think there will be, even though a lot of the field is in air, it's still going to concentrate it, but I'm not sure, Dick, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I think it's going to be still quite a bit of change because the nail is going to cause quite a bit of change in it, but I'm not sure. I'll turn it back to you, Dick.
If my solenoid coil is very large in diameter, and there was a little bit of residual magnetic field in the nail, there's a whole lot of lines of magnetic field flowing down the nail. They come out of one end of the nail. They curve around to go back to the other end of the nail. If my solenoid coil is large enough in diameter, almost all of those lines of magnetic field, the ones going to the left on the center of the nail, the ones going to the right on the outside of the nail, are all inside of the solenoid. The solenoid no longer sees the differential magnetic field for inside of nail versus outside of nail. The solenoid coil is now outside of all of that magnetic field. I think the solenoid will almost not see the nail anymore. You see where I'm going on that one, John number two, K2RIW?
Okay, but what would happen for, I was just thinking about the case of the search coil in a metal locator. You get a vast change in inductance. That's what triggers the search coil in a metal locator, is that when you have some kind of ferrite containing material like a meteorite, for example, where you you get a big change in inductance, and that's how they can detect some kind of iron-containing minerals or something. Go ahead.
Hey, you said some magic words there, John, number two. You said a big change in magnetic field. If you've got a very large diameter coil, you're trying to cover quite a bit of area and go down quite a depth in the soil, so you get a large diameter coil, you see a big change because you're operating your system as a balanced bridge. You may be getting 0.1% of change in inductance, but because your bridge is so carefully balanced, that gives you a big output signal. If there wasn't a balancing bridge, you might not detect the difference. Back to you, John, number two.
Okay, I thought they only keyed off change in inductance, but that coil is part of a balanced bridge, I guess, as you say, that's, and then the magnetic material unbalances it. Okay. Okay, I still have to think about it a little bit, Dick. I'm going to turn it back to you. I think John had a comment before, also John number one. So back to you, Dick.
Go ahead, John number one.
Dick, I was just going to mention the fact that you put an edge-wound coil of twin lead around the nail, a large nail, and the current through both coils identical, so the magnetic fields being developed in them are identical. Yes, the inner coil will couple better to the nail, but don't forget, it's shorted at one end, so we have a counter-magnetic field returning. So I don't think we would see too much of a difference inserting that nail.
See, because you would have something like a pancake coil flat, then we're dealing also with the increase with every wind, the capacitance of it. And we would actually deal with the resonance circuit and direct shape.
Speaking DC, I thought.
Yeah, with DC, John, I'm going to agree with you. There's no difference between the inner coil and the outer coil for DC. However, I've almost gotten John number two to agree, not yet, that the amount of inductance I get with the same number of turns of solenoid coil, a very large diameter, a very small diameter, I get two very different inductances. By the same token, when I add the nail between the two coils, the total amount of inductance of the large coil with nail and the total amount of inductance with the small coil with nail are very different amounts of total inductance. Therefore, when I take the twin lead type solenoid, shorted at the end, and I put AC through it, because the outer coil on the twin lead has a very different inductance than the inner coil on the twin lead solenoid. Now with the AC going down there, ordinarily, if I transmit a balanced AC signal into the twin lead, right-hand twin lead, I'm putting plus 1 volt, negative twin lead, I'm putting minus 1 volt of a, let me pick a number, 1 megahertz signal. If everything was balanced, the zero voltage point would occur at the short circuit on the twin lead at the far end. But because the
Eric, can you switch?